Hey, everybody. So welcome to today's podcast, episode 11, first one of season two. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad I finished a whole season. I didn't think I was going to finish a whole season that quickly. It's hard sometimes to do things like this where you have multiple episodes, like a podcast or a YouTube channel, particularly when you have a lot of projects. And I have a lot of projects. I'm always working on my own personal music that I write. I'm working on learning songs that I have to work on for a cover band I'm in. I teach all week. I have my podcast. I have my YouTube. And of course, I have a whole farm and a family that I'm working to support here. So there's just a lot going on. But this is amazing. I've already finished season one, and here we are. So if you're a listener who's already been listening, welcome back, and thank you. Thank you so much. And if you're new, then welcome. And for all the listeners, please go to my website, nicolalongis.com, bookmark that sucker and save it. We have lessons and workshops and pedagogy and things that I offer up there, live music. So if you're interested in hiring, I am always working. Additionally, I have my music books and music that I've written up there. So please check that out. And if you're interested in being a future podcast guest, or perhaps you have some thoughts, suggestions, questions, whatever ideas, email them over to nico@nicolalongis.com. So let's get down to brass tacks, shall we? So today we're going to be having a little chat about a film that got a hell of a lot of attention last year. There's a film on Netflix called Cuties, and we're going to be talking about that and where it's led today. Before we get into that, I'd like to tell a story to everybody. I know everybody goes, story time, he's going to start rambling about something I don't care about. No, seriously, this is really important, okay? We have a big problem out there with child trafficking. We have child abuse. It's always been there. It's been there for generations, and it will unfortunately always be there until we have become a society that just doesn't have emotional problems. But we have major issues out there. There are kids who suffer at the hands of adults who do not understand how to treat children right. I've been a teacher for a long, long time, and for the thousands of students that I've had and the kids that I've worked with, and even kids that I've worked with outside of my immediate teaching at the school, I have to say that there's a lot going on out there. You see kids where they're just like something's a little off and you know something's wrong. I've had kids show up where they were great for like a year and all of a sudden came in one day and they were not themselves and you suspected something wasn't there. And sometimes it's just a problem at home that's going to work itself out. And other times it's just, you know, they've finally gotten to a breaking point, or perhaps they came of age. They got to an age where the abuse became more abusive. Sometimes abuse doesn't happen at a younger age. For instance, I witnessed a case where the adult parent was incredibly endearing and sweet to his children until they became young adults. And suddenly they were tramps, they were whores, they were just future women he didn't want to talk to. And that's what happens sometimes. So abuse goes in all different directions. But the story I want to share is interesting. It's in regards to a student that I taught somewhat recently. It was a few years ago. And, you know, we all have our regrets in life. I somewhat regret not being able to help this child because this is something that, you know, I would gladly do at any point that a child is in danger. I think everybody should jump in and say, let's help this child out. But sometimes your hands are tied and it's just a very difficult situation because you do have to prove abuse. That's very important. Remember, you can't accuse people of things because if you do that, wrongful prosecution kicks in and now you're opening the door for, you know, trouble yourself. And being that I work for a school, if I am making a wrongful accusation or I cannot prove my accusation, then not only am I risking losing my job, but I am jeopardizing the school, in which case that, you know, they could be opened up for a tremendous lawsuit or something. So you have to be very careful with these things. Unfortunately, that's the way the law is. Law is like that. Any lawyer, any police officer, legitimate, good, hardworking police officer with experience will tell you that you do have to have all of your facts there. You cannot just jump straight, you know, down somebody's throat without all the proof that you need. So even when it seems to be cut and dry, you still have difficulties, and it makes it very hard. So anyway, that's just something that makes our jobs a little difficult, and probably the main reason that abuse happens so much. Because 9 out of 10 times, we're probably right when we recognize the abuse, but you know, we'd be perfectly in the right in that situation at any time, even prior to modern society, to just go up to that person and slap them silly, right? But really, in today's world, that's not acceptable. We do, at least in this country, have to prove things, and that's the way we've set things out in our laws. And it's there for a reason, that step-by-step process is there to protect the innocent, make sure that people are not wrongfully accused, because that happens well enough already, but it also allows the criminals a little bit more freedom. And that's why it is really hard to capture a criminal, you know, because you do have to work very, very hard to get all of those pieces of the puzzle together. And when it comes to abuse, you're really on a bit of a clock. The longer you wait, the more it continues. It's not like a murder case, right? If somebody kills somebody, that person's dead. If you wait a year to catch them or 3 weeks to catch them, it doesn't matter. If you catch them in the end, you've caught them, but the person they killed is not any more or less dead. They're dead. Abuse is something that continues on and on and on and on and on. And the longer you wait, the more it continues. So it's a very, very volatile situation. So anyway, a few years ago, I was teaching a student who had a parent with some questionable issues. At first, it was just like overbearingness, okay? Just seemed like the parent was just constantly micromanaging things. And her father was emailing me monthly to express his concern with her lack of practice and inability to progress, okay? Now, this could be a viable concern for a parent who's spending money on music lessons and perhaps takes it seriously, maybe wants this to be more than just enjoyable, wants the student to treat it as serious as schoolwork, you know? So maybe it's just a matter of how strict they are in that household. So I was getting these monthly letters, and I would write him as a responsible teacher. I would actually write him very quickly. I get my emails right away, but I would jump on them pretty much in the same day if I could and say, you know, look, I find this a little shocking. I think she's doing a splendid job. And I didn't say shocking in the initial email responses. I would just say she's doing great. She's doing fantastic. But as they continued to come in, I said, I'm finding this rather shocking because really she works hard. She shows me that. She plays great. She's got a wonderful attitude. She's practically a model student as far as I'm concerned. So like any responsible teacher, I told him his daughter was a great student, but the emails kept coming in. And I thought to myself, you know, this is strange. Like, it got to a point where I started seeing a tone change in the email where he was almost trying to prove that this was a different child at home or something, and that I just don't know what I'm talking about, and that I need to be by his side in whatever this problem is, when really I'm not seeing any problem. And it's not my responsibility to help him as a parent at home. I see your child once a week for a whole 30 minutes. So this is very strange behavior, nothing that was at all normal, and certainly with my years of experience, I'd never seen anything like this, and I was smelling a rat right away. But again, I played my cards correctly and just, you know, assured him everything was fine, but the tone was interesting. At one point in later emails, he was actually saying things like, well, my daughter is an absolute monster when it comes to getting her to practice. I don't like the idea of calling a young child a monster in the first place. I mean, in jest, perhaps, and it was hard to read the tone in the email, but he seemed rather upset. And I was thinking to myself, well, I don't see this part of her personality. So either you have a bipolar 11-year-old, which is awfully young to be that way. It's very rare that we see children that young with major problems, but it is possible. I don't know. At any rate, it continued. One day, she arrived for class, and as she was coming in the front door, he was coming in behind her, but he didn't really come in the building. He just opened the door for her. She came in, and I saw him, as I came around the corner, give her a violent poke, like just poked her in the door, and she lost her steps. She bumbled a little bit. She looked over her shoulder at him, looking rather scared. Her shoulders came up like she was cringing, And then, you know, the shocked look on her face changed when, you know, she turned and saw me. And while she's looking at me and smiling, I see his finger pointing at her. I can't hear what he's saying, but he's definitely menacing this child for whatever reason. And I don't understand the poke. You don't poke a child that firmly. And then he seemed to have seen me, but then just closed the door. He didn't come in. So now immediately I'm smelling guilt. You know, you look at this and you go, this guy's guilty. Like, he's doing something he's not supposed to do, and he just got caught. He took off. So, you know, she looks shocked, but again, she was happy when she saw me, and I treat her like a child should be treated, and I welcomed her in, and we came in, and I think she was just, you know, happy to see me as an adult that she respected and felt was respectful to her, but also comforted in the fact that her father had left the building. So she was happy, and I kind of went, well, okay, something's going on there. We moved on. Another day, I was on one of my trips to the library. I was working on my music books that I've written, and at the time they were, you know, in the early stages, and I was doing all my homework on that. And as I was leaving the library, I ran into them just, you know, coming in. You know, we were like on the walkway going from the parking lot to the front door. And so I ran into them, and so he stopped to talk to me, and he seemed friendly for a moment. And his daughter was there with him, so it was the two of them. And he was speaking with me without any issues, no problems, and she'd been holding his cell phone. And suddenly, without a hint of a warning, he ripped the cell phone out of her hand violently, just yanked it away from her as if, you know, how dare you touch that? You know better, you stupid kid. You know, like, really just angry. And she flinched. She flinched like she was expecting to be backhanded or something afterwards, you know? She didn't even, like, look at him like, sorry. She was expecting the next step to be whacked. And this is something that you always have to question, okay? So quick side story to my story, but one time, while my wife was pregnant, one of the times she was pregnant, we were at her OBGYN, and we're in the waiting room, and there's a woman there who is, you know, reprimanding her two-year-old. I mean, just a little toddler bobbling around the room. And she's not getting up. She's just yelling at him from across the room. And I'm rolling my eyes, looking at my wife, and we're both kind of muttering to each other, saying, if this woman doesn't stop screaming, I mean, like, why doesn't she just get up and get the child? This is ridiculous that she's letting the child run amok and she's just yelling from across the room. And what's even more odd is a secretary working at the front desk who's saying nothing whatsoever. It's like, you know, is there no control here? What's going on? So with that, the woman got up and began to unbuckle her belt and said, "You want some? You want some?" And the child came back. Now, a two-year-old does not have prior, you know, understanding that if you unbuckle a belt, the belt comes off, and then you're going to get beat with this belt. At most, if they have ever seen a belt and understand at all at that age, they just know it goes on your pants. And maybe they've deduced that it holds your pants up. For that child to have responded to a butt-whooping potential implied by a belt means there is abuse. So looking at the reaction on a child is very important. And when this little girl had flinched when the father had ripped the phone out of her hand, that was a sign that there was more probably happening in usual cases at home. But because he was in public, that was as far as he was taking it. He rolled his eyes at me. He smiled and shrugged and expressed his stress as a parent having to deal with such an awful child. And there was clearly abuse. You know, now I'm seeing abuse. But again, it's not enough to prove it. It's just enough to prove that this guy might be a little bit of a loose cannon. But perhaps at home, you know, he might have a wife who keeps him under control. Who knows? We don't know the situation yet. So there's just signs of this. And as I've said, it's hard to prove it. Now, the straw for me was when the child showed up for her class one day and her father came in to chat again about her lack of practicing. And he referred to her again as a little monster. And when it came to picking up the slack at home, you know, he wasn't seeing her do anything, and yet I couldn't see the little monster, right? We're just like, we have two completely different worlds, and he's here expressing this to me. So I looked at her, and she was really, you know, a timid, sweet child. And while she was always fine talking to me casually in the class, here with her father there, this intelligent child who played beautifully and had no reason to feel this way, would not look at me. She had her back turned. She was 180 degrees to both of us, and she was sobbing. And I went, okay. So I looked at the father, and he showed absolutely no concern. He did not have an interest in calming her down or anything. And with that, he just said, okay, so she doesn't practice enough, but, you know, I just thought I'd let you know. And he left. And that was it. He just left his kid crying and, you know, said, happy trails. I hope you have a great lesson, you know. And I just thought, this is really inappropriate parenting. This is a parent who doesn't give a crap about his kid. So again, this wasn't enough to press charges, but this is enough to, you know, perhaps want to take the guy out back and slap him around a little bit till he's crying, right? You know, this is not a reasonable adult. This is an adult who in the right company would get his butt kicked by other adults. So, you know, some people would say that I should have just called in like a welfare check with social services perhaps or something like that. But I don't think those hunches and things based on these were enough because, you know, he hid it from us for like a year. And if he's experienced enough in figuring out, you know, if he's played these psychological games and there's no physical abuse, it is psychological and emotional abuse, he could hide this from social services. You know, he could hide this from anyone. And, you know, it's just hearsay at that point. You have to have physical abuse or you have to have him have a questionable outburst in front of whoever is investigating this. So it's, you know, it's still not there. Like, he wasn't showing that. He's just got little bits and pieces of things that any of us could probably add up and say this is it, but that's not going to hold over in a court of law because the court of law, it's not their job to make a model citizen out of someone. In other words, if somebody's just a complete jerk, just a real jackass, that's still not illegal. It really isn't. It's perfectly legal to be a complete jerk. Obviously, look at our entire government. It's like there's no reason to press charges there, right? We need more than he's a complete jerk. So the straw that broke the camel's back with this guy for the entire situation, the real thing that made it blow up and still not quite the way we would have liked, was one day I was 5 minutes late. There's traffic, there's construction in the area, and I got stuck on the way to work behind a tractor on a one-lane road, and the tractor's going like 15 miles an hour. And I just thought, this is great. So there was no way, even with my leaving home early, I was not getting to work on time today. And I just thought, I need this like a hole in the head. I don't like being late, folks. I don't like it. I'm always early. I try to be early. Sometimes things happen. You're maybe a couple of minutes late. It happens. But I don't like keeping people waiting. I find it to be, you know, rude. I'd rather wait for somebody else. And so there I am. I'm running late. So I figured, you know, once I was predictably going to be about 5 minutes late, I called the school and said, look, I'm behind. Please tell her, go in the lesson room, tune up. She was my first student of the day, this child. So it was her that I was inconveniencing. And I said, you know, tell her to go in the lesson room, tune herself up, warm up. We use the first few minutes for every lesson to warm up anyway. So you go in, you warm up without your teacher. You know what to do. She's got her books. And I will be there ASAP. And we'll just jump into the lesson. And I only arrive 5 minutes late. It's not horrible. 5 minutes is doable, you know, you can use a bathroom break in that time. But I bolted in the studio, I apologized to the student, or at least I meant to. She wasn't there. And I thought, oh, well, that's an odd coincidence, you know. I've had students that, you know, just happen to cancel the same day that I happen to be running late. That's actually a funny coincidence that has happened to me several times in the past. So you go, okay. Maybe she didn't show up. That's a good thing, I suppose. I'm technically not late. I'm now, instead of 5 minutes late, I'm 25 minutes early for the next class. But I was a little puzzled. So I came out, went to the front desk. I said, I don't see her things. Did she not show up? And they said, well, you know, because I thought this would be, this was an odd coincidence. So we've got a real pro in our administrative group. All of our office staff are incredible, wonderful at what they do. But one of our one of our pros back there who's just, he just kicks butt. She looks at me and she said, well, there was an incident. And I went, uh-oh. So, you know, we got a little closer together and had a little powwow, hush, hush. And I said, what's going on? She said, how would you feel if we issued a mandatory withdrawal? And I said, of that kid? She said, yeah. And, you know, mandatory withdrawal works like this. We have official enrollment. Nobody comes in and just says, I want lessons, and then you put them down for Tuesday. Like, there's paperwork to be filled out here. So we have total enrollment. And with that, we have a withdrawal process. You can't just disappear because we, by contract, will still continue to charge your credit card or whatever. So you do have to make sure that you at least give us an actual official notice that you're withdrawing. And this was the first time ever that I heard the school just say, you know, we're forcing withdrawal here. And I just was floored. So I knew something was not good. So I said, well, why? What happened? And she explained to me that, you know, my tardiness had come with, you know, the parent asking for a lesson or a makeup lesson or a refund. And of course, the school said, you know, could tag on a little extra time or something, but it doesn't constitute like a whole cancellation just because I was 5 minutes late. It's, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, they said they'd be happy to talk to me and maybe give extra time. I don't mind coming in a little early since it was the first student of the day. I could definitely do that the following week, and that's no problem. As always, our staff is very sweet, endearing, friendly people. And so the girl in the office, now we have two buildings at the school I work at. They're on the same property, same parking lot, but they're two separate buildings. So the girl that was taking this this call from the other building was fairly new. You know, she'd been there a few months, but she did a bang-up job. She was great. I mean, that's why we had her there. And she wasn't inexperienced. She was just new. But she'd been with us a few months, and she was also the youngest person in the office. She's in her 20s, and, you know, young doesn't mean stupid. It just means young and perhaps inexperienced. But she did a bang-up job, and there she was talking to this father, and the father just exploded in a tirade of profanities. He referred to her using words I will not repeat right now, but he called her all kinds of names. And we're just not tolerant of that, okay? We're just not. Like, I had a parent showed up once at a different school I worked at, and he was completely inebriated, and he was screaming at the receptionist. And I came out and told him if he keeps it up, he's going to be taking the stairs home, and it won't be because he's walking down them. So I think it was better for this guy that I was still stuck in traffic, because I would have probably thrown him out myself and made quite a spectacle of his error. I would have made a spectacle of him due to whatever mistake he just made here, because you do not walk into our office and start cussing out the entire staff, particularly calling them names as he did. So I was floored. I didn't have much of a shock on my face because I knew his personality and I sensed something, but I was a little disturbed that this had happened, and more so because I really liked this child. She was a great student and a real pleasure to teach. So one could say again that his outburst was proof that he was an abusive person. Yes, I agree. It's definitely proof of that, but not enough to declare child abuse. This is a guy who could have easily made excuses for his behavior. You know, he could have said anything. I had a horrible family emergency, and I was stressed, and I don't know what came over me. I lost my mind. Sorry. Call an exorcist. I'm crazy today. You know, he could have done anything and followed it up with a fake but sincere sounding apology, and nobody would be able to, you know, just say he's obviously a child abuser. Look at how he went off on our secretary. That still isn't enough, right? It still just categorizes him as a complete jerk. These types of abusers are usually quite cunning. They hide their abuse really well, especially when they're being accused. They know what they're doing. So, the analysis process here is very interesting. How do we assess what's going on? Was he abusive because of his own issues? Was he abusive because he was just genuinely an authentic asshat? You know, was he, pardon my French, but was he an asshole? You know, what was the reason? Was it cultural, perhaps? Now, here's how that comes into play, okay? We have stereotypes, and I want to clarify that I am not stereotyping. We are just discussing something that is. But as an example on where stereotypes come from, which often is because people are ignorant and they find a small group of people in a large culture and then just assume the whole culture is like that. And that's what stereotypes essentially are. His family is Indian, East Indian, okay? While many of them are very peaceful, beautiful people as a culture, there are some issues, as there are Americans, okay? I'd like to say that I know some wonderful, wonderful people in our country, but there are plenty that I can also say are not people that I would use as the shining example of our country. So it goes the same everywhere you are. It doesn't matter. Does not matter. Part of India still believes in its ancient caste system, okay? They really believe that there's like hierarchies in their society. And I think to some extent we have a bit of that here. You know, it's an ancient system there, and it's there. And in that, with some ancient traditions, a part of India also still exercises arranged marriages. Now, when we hear arranged marriages in the West, we hear about it, we think to ourselves, some sort of primitive society and togas and headdresses, or, you know, women are you know, whatever it is, they're obviously treated as an inferior thing, and it's a huge culture. It's really still a very small part of the world and very small little bits and pieces of particular cultures and particular countries. So not at all like that. This is a wonderful country, India. It's really like a lot of it is absolutely gorgeous. I know many of them, actually, most of my clients here where I live are Indian, and a lot of them are beautiful people, wonderful people. Always polite, always, you know, they're family oriented. So this is not the case, but there is a small part of India that does the arranged marriage thing. So another little side story to this long story, but I taught two adult Indian men, young men, and taught them for like a portion of a season, you know, just a few months. And they took lessons together. It was kind of a simultaneous thing. I don't usually do that, but this is what they wanted to do, I think, to save money. They had split the bill and taken a shared class. And it was just for fun, you know. They were laughing at each other over who messed up more, and we had a good time, you know. We weren't taking it seriously. It was just for fun, just enjoyment. It's music. Enjoy it. One day, they said they were discontinuing lessons to move back to India. So the conversation was simply me saying, you know, oh, nice, you're going back to stay closer to family, right? Yeah, that's cool. And their reply was, no, we're getting married. And I heard we're getting married and saw these two guys, and at first I kind of assumed they meant to each other, you know, and so I didn't want to say anything awkward. I just said, oh, okay. And I found it kind of odd in my mind because they both declared they were getting married. And I didn't realize India supported gay marriage. As far as I know today, it's still a huge question mark. They aren't really legalizing it yet, or if they have, it's quite new. So at that time, it wasn't. It wasn't a thing. And I just thought to myself, this is odd, but okay. And so, you know, to this day, they are in fact still grappling with the idea, but I thought we were talking about gay marriage since two grown men had looked at me and said, we are going to India to get married. Apparently, it was just a language barrier and they just phrased it wrong. That wasn't what they meant. The boys weren't gay. They were not entering into an arranged marriage together. They were entering into arranged marriages with two women. So they were both going because they had both had ladies waiting for them that were, you know, prepared to be married to them. This is a strange concept for those of us in the West not understanding any of this. I don't support the idea. But they hadn't met their soon-to-be wives, never met them, and they were quite giddy about seeing them. This, in America, we call this desperate for a date, but when we discussed it, they were chuckling as if they had won some sort of contest, okay? Like, they were really happy. They were like, yeah, we're getting married, yeah, you know, and I'm thinking, you're awfully happy, I don't even know this person. They could have terrible hygiene or be a god-awful cook or, you know, whatever the case may be here. This is very strange behavior for you're awfully happy without knowing what's going on. So obviously they're happy because they've in an arranged marriage type of situation, it's like you're being awarded a trophy of some kind. And you know, I suppose it's exciting for men who are, you know, on the receiving end of said trophy, but I'll tell you what, it's less exciting for the women. So what can I tell you? Hide your children if you're in that society. But here's something. So now we're going to get a little bit more adult in our discussion, but when it comes to sexuality, okay, we all know how this works, but we're going to discuss this. Men will pretty much settle for more than women will. Okay, that's just a fact. That's just an unfortunate, ugly thing that we have to admit to. Guys will actually proudly say, "Yeah, well, it's us. Yep, well, that's true." And women are kind of like rolling their eyes, wishing it wasn't so, but perhaps still admitting that yes, it is. But yeah, men sort of biologically speaking, just speaking on the animal side of things, they kind of need to have sex, okay? Yes, we're going there. If a man is, you know, sexually average, he's going to need a little help with his confidence. An arranged marriage is gold for a goofy-looking dude who perhaps has minuscule endowment in his favor, right? Like he's not sporting the right tools for the job, but he's been hired to work on whatever. For women, sexuality can be a need or a desire, but for the most part, women need a lot more than men do to be sexually attracted to someone. Men are kind of like, oh, good, she had two arms and two legs, we're good. Like, that's sort of the animalistic thinking. And sorry, guys, I'm throwing all of us under the bus right now. I know everybody's going to come after me for this one. But, you know, then there's the home life thing, right? A man in an arranged marriage has been awarded a wife. She's the house caretaker, the domestic professional, and he goes to work every day. So in that situation, the wife has duties at home while the man is, you know, more or less in charge. And that's what comes with the arranged marriage thing. This social injustice, as we see it, is the very reason most cultures do not support the idea of arranged marriages, because it is an injustice. It's not fair. It's not what marriage should be about. It certainly is almost enslavement in that thinking, and that certainly isn't love. We know that. So anyway, keep that in mind. Arranged marriages are a thing. Let's get back to our abusive jerk parent, okay? He might very well be a husband involved in an arranged marriage. His behavior towards his daughter displayed a tremendous superiority complex. His audacity to behave that way towards our female staff only confirmed that he most likely has a thorough disregard for the opposite sex. In his belief system, women are stupid, inferior objects meant to serve men. And this is the mind of a general abuser. But, you know, you gotta wonder if arranged marriages kind of come with a bit of this too. And somebody might go into that and still be a very good husband, while others might go into that and be a little bit 50-50 because of their superiority complex. And others might go in there like this gentleman, or rather we'll just call him Little Weenie. And just be a complete and total jerk to try to maintain his kingdom and his throne. So, that's basically the beginning story here, and I wanted to share that. I know it was a long story. It was like a half hour of just telling you about this complete jerk and this unfortunate thing. But why am I mentioning this? Because it was very difficult to have what was necessary to press charges against this guy. You know, it would be much easier, although not legal, to just take him out back and pummel him. This was a very difficult situation, an unfortunate situation where the school couldn't really step in. We had to do what was right for us, and we left a child in an abusive situation, pretty much stuck in that abusive situation. And this is a very, very difficult thing. And I'm mentioning this because we have so many times in this country where we look at things and say, well, you know, it is what it is. Or people say, well, that happens everywhere. You can't do anything about it. this sort of hands-off, I don't give a crap attitude is the very reason it does, because people don't stand up and say, well, not in my community. I don't think so. Okay. There are little, communities are very large today, you know, they tend to be a lot larger than they used to be eons ago, but, as the population increases and places become more populated, as cities grow, communities tend to be, you know, different than they were in small, little tiny towns per se. I think of it as like, we have people that are, for instance, a small group of people, small groups of people around the country who are started doing off the grid living. They share things, they garden together. Everybody has their own skills. It's almost like they're settlers in the Old West starting a new town. And they kind of are, you know, but they're using some modern techniques like solar power and things. And they're small communities, only like 100 people, you know, and they're just kind of working together to do their thing. In those communities, I can tell you what, when they only have 100 people, they are not tolerant of crime or abuse or anything like that. You're going to be kicked out of that community if not beaten. So there is no excuse for anyone in a larger community to just say, well, it happens. No, it happens because you are one of many saying it happens. When you really, what you should be saying is, are you kidding me? Okay. One of the coolest things I heard somebody say quite boldly was when I was talking about another abusive situation. I was in a public place. I was actually at a bar. I was doing a gig, and we were between sets, and I'm hanging out, and I started telling a story about some children that I knew that were, you know, definitely being abused. Their father was a complete jerk, just really needed a pummeling. And as I mentioned, one of the comments they made, which was calling his teenage daughter a slut, which was for no reason other than she wanted to join the cheerleading squad. Seriously, she wanted to be a cheerleader. So the father said, he could have said, well, I guess if it makes you happy, I don't like the idea, you know, for whatever reason, or maybe disgusted as a freaking adult. Instead, he just turned around and said, you know, well, you're a slut. They're all sluts. So I guess you're a whore. You know, this is how he treated his daughter. And as I mentioned this, one of the guys that was there turned to me and said exactly what should be said in our communities when we hear this stuff. He turned around and he said, I'm not condoning violence, folks. I'm not condoning violence. But unfortunately, you have to put your foot down and stop babying around all these topics. This guy looked at me and he said, oh, really? Where does he live? I hate to tell you, but I got the guy's address. I just didn't give it to him at that moment. But I had the address, and I could have easily said, where does he live? You're volunteering? Here you go. Here's where he lives. So I was a little pissed off, and I was quite tempted to give out that address. But this guy flat out said, yeah, where does he live? This is the right response. This is the, if I see you, you're in trouble. So, you know, we need a little more of that. You don't have to have vigilantism. You don't have to be violent. But I think we need people to at least verbally say, I don't freaking think so. Not in my town. So, you know, put your feet down a little firmly and stop babying around when you hear about things that are clearly abuse. And if you don't think they are, they are. So let's get down to the next bit of business here, because this was a wonderful 30-minute prelude to something else that is just as much abuse as my story and any other situation that could be considered child abuse. Last year, Netflix released the film Cuties. Okay. If you haven't heard about it, you might be living under a rock at this point, because it was a big freaking deal. Even my 75-year-old mother heard about it. She doesn't even have Netflix or really pay attention to what's on the internet. So this was a big deal. Now, if you don't know what Cuties is, we'll just tell you real quick. It was a film that was released, and it was, I guess, the surface description of it, the intended description to go with the trailer, was that we've got a coming-of-age story where a young 11-year-old girl rebels against her extraordinarily religious family and decides to explore a dance troupe that, you know, is a little twerky, and so, you know, it goes above and beyond what the family would condone, and that's the story. Not quite, okay? With that, a lot of parents were pissed off. I was a little annoyed by it, you might say. I reported it to Netflix and said, are you kidding me? You know, this is, you're going to allow this? just some crazy stuff. And the replies we got from Netflix, I saved my reply. I posted the reply, and I you know, I even shared the reply and had somebody look at me when they saw the reply and say, "Oh no, that's a hoax. It was already debunked by fact checkers on the internet." And I just want to say, first of all, folks, there has never been, is not, and never will be a job called fact checker, because you can't check everything in the universe and make sure the internet is clean. Like this imaginary fairy that's flying around with a magic wand to convince us that the internet will be cleaned up because we have fact checkers now. Give me a freaking break. So they told me that this thing I showed as a Netflix response from Netflix was disproven by fact checkers, and that never happened. It's the response I personally got. It damn well did happen. That's my screenshot. So that was ridiculous. Netflix just didn't want to fess up to any of anything that was going on. But here's the deal, okay? So the Netflix mentality. In keeping with the same theme as our abusive little friend that I mentioned in our earlier story today, let's revisit last year's debacle here. Netflix decided to break into the soft core porn, child porn genre, okay? Now, immediately everybody's going, "Are you kidding me?" Some people will even argue with me, as they did last year, saying it's not softcore child porn. Please do tell me how you define that and at what point it becomes that, because it was close enough for this parent of two girls. So Netflix advertised immensely for this upcoming film that was going to be an exclusive on Netflix. Okay, no other platform is going to carry it. The film is independently made by an unknown filmmaker starring unknown actors. You would think that they would want to push their film from Sundance to, like, other platforms as much as possible. You know, start getting it out there if you want to make it in the big biz, right? Go to the free platforms. Oddly, this never happened. Why? Was it because Netflix was responsible for the entire process, or was it because the film was so disgusting that nobody else, including free platforms like YouTube or whatever, would have even allowed it? Whatever it was a Netflix exclusive that was quote-unquote adopted from the Sundance Film Festival and all of that. The film claims to be a coming-of-age story, as I mentioned. It's about an 11-year-old girl who rebels against her strict family traditions to pursue a liberal modern-day dance troupe. Modern-day dance troupe, okay? I love the phrasing of this. She and a large group of school chums enter into a contest and work towards winning the contest to show their families that they can do whatever they want to do, everything's cool, and that they have not made a dreadful mistake in life. No, that's not what the movie's about. That's what Netflix would like us to believe. This isn't at all what the film was about, okay? The implied story is sprinkled around the film very lightly. The film focuses almost entirely on sexual images and child sexuality, okay? I don't put child and sexuality in the same sentence. It shouldn't be, but that's what was happening in this film. The implication is that it is quite common and perfectly normal for an 11-year-old girl to explore her sexual side. I've been a teacher for 25 years, folks. I have raised two daughters. I have never, ever met an 11-year-old girl who I thought was sexy or who thought about sex or her own genitalia. I mean, no, I never, ever, ever heard of such a thing. Nope, no way, nope, no, no. But Netflix would like us to believe that that's a thing, okay? Like, when I was 10, I stumbled on my dad's Playboy collection. Sorry, Dad. And, you know, I was, like, eyes wide open going, nude women, girls, you know? But here's the thing. Playboy, first of all, never showed bare genitalia. They only showed, they showed naked bodies, but that region was generally always well hidden in the way that the photos were presented or taken. And it was mostly just breasts and nude bodies. And it was about being sexy, but being tasteful at the same time. And that's why Playboy was the first and still stood, you know, stood time itself, just went by generations, like generations knew about Playboy. So There I am. My dad, I'm saying this, my dad did not have all the hardcore magazines. He just had these, but he had them. And I stumbled on them as 10, and I was like, wow. And I was with a friend, so my friend saw it, and we were both like, oh my God, you know. And then my mom called us, and we were like, oopsies. And so she, you know, tried to explain that that was a no-no, and then yelled at my dad for not, you know, putting them away or hiding them or getting rid of them or whatever. But I can assure you that if it was a Playgirl magazine, I don't think a 10-year-old girl would be interested in opening it. Most 10-year-old girls would have not even, they would have looked and went, ugh, whatever. No way. Gross. So anyway, boys are notoriously ahead of girls when it comes to their hormonal urges. Okay, not maturity. Mental maturity, no way. In fact, some of us are still working on that. But the idea that an 11-year-old girl would think about sex is incredibly absurd. Combining that with an entire troop of them, that's ridiculous. Okay, Netflix is ridiculous. This film is ridiculous. Naturally, the entire adult population erupted and protested against the release of the film, with a viral internet explosion demanding the film be burned at the stake. Netflix ignored everybody. They just released it and said, nah, don't worry about it. We know better than you do. Because they want your money, folks, okay? That's all they care about. Until they are brought to court and sued or charges are pressed, they don't care. There's nothing a few thousand parents are going to say that's going to matter to Netflix. Nevertheless, tens of thousands of parents left Netflix. I left Netflix. Said, well, tough nookies, we're out of here. There's other movie channels, and you're not the only one or the best one or even one that I care that much about. Folks, I don't even really watch TV, so to lose Netflix was no big deal when you live the type of lifestyle that I live. But I know some people are TV addicted. Their couch and their butt have some sort of affair going on. I get it. Customers were so disgusted that they canceled their subscriptions, okay? Tens of thousands of them. Some of us stuck around just long enough to explore the film to see if it was just advertising faux pas or not. When you cancel Netflix, it doesn't shut down immediately. Most people canceled it and then deleted the app, but the service continues until that last month that you paid for has expired. So if you still have 2 weeks before the next payment, you still get 2 weeks of Netflix even after you've canceled. So, I checked out the film, and I'm going to start talking about some of this here, but we have to always keep in mind that movies are not real, but real people are in them, okay? So sure, you're just telling a fictional story here, but the story is intended to entertain and perhaps inform, correct? Wrongo. Not correct. Because the film stars a group of very young girls, and they were asked to do some very questionable things in this film in the name of acting. What they were doing was highly inappropriate. In many states, we could have arrested someone for making that film. Okay? True story. Like, in the process of filming that, somebody could have seen that, called the police, and they would have shown up and said, no. Okay? Nobody was arrested, however, because the film is French-made. It was made in another country where this is okay, which I find very interesting because none of the kids in the film were French. So how they ended up in a French film, I don't know. The original title of Cuties, for the record, is a French title, is Mignons. And I probably am not pronouncing that properly, but the word for the original title translates to sweet or cute or adorable. And when your poster features kids in sexual positions that say, come and get me, I don't think sweet and adorable is the title you want to put there. You know, like, this is a little bit weird. And this is not a cultural difference, although it in ways it can be. I had somebody from France actually defend it and tell me I was way off. And naturally, I said, well, have you seen the film? And they said, no, but it's from our country. Well, then you're an obnoxious snob, because if you didn't see the film, you don't even know what you're talking about. So, anyway, at what point will films decide to make actual pornographic films with children and get away with it, calling it acting? Like, when do we get to that point? Is that what we're going towards here? I'm going to list some of the questionable points in the film. You guys can define it any which way you want to or think about it, but this was done through my own personal research. I watched the film and I took note. It's not that hard to do. You could do it yourself for whatever the monthly subscription is over at Netflix Central. The movie posters are a variety of sexual images. Okay, there's several different poster types, but if you look around, you know, the internet, there are a couple of different movie posters, and they're sexual in nature. And there's not a picture of girls hanging out together or having fun. The one poster shows the girls standing in a row, blowing kisses to the audience. Right, you're the viewer, and the girl closest to the camera is blowing a kiss straight at you, and then all the girls behind her are blowing kisses. Look, I will be the first to tell you that it's almost sad in society that we cannot, as adults, allow a child to go and give a kiss on the cheek to another adult, right? Like, if your teacher or, you know, your priest or anyone, any respectable adult comes up to you and, you know, compliments and whatever, and does maybe a sweet gesture or a gift in good taste, of course, no ill intention. We're not talking about the pedophiles out there, you know. No dirty Uncle Joes. We're talking legitimate situations. We have a society where if the child turns around and kisses the adult on the cheek, it's up to the parent to decide whether or not that was appropriate. But society in general has gotten this eewy kind of feeling that that's dirty and gross and not allowed. And so, you know, we don't do that anymore. And vice versa, you know, you don't kiss your children anymore. It's like, it's weird. It's gotten to the point where you're almost not even allowed to hug a child as a teacher. I still keep in touch with my first grade teacher. Yeah, a long time ago, but I still keep in touch with her. She used to hug us all the damn time. And when I talked to her recently, she goes, I still don't care about any of that stuff. I will hug a child. Good for her. But, the movie poster shows these girls blowing a kiss and it's like, okay. But there's another one where the girls are each in their dance attire in a sexy pose. One's got her butt out. The other one's got her butt out on all fours. The other one's got her legs spread. Like, every single one of these girls are in a tight dance attire posing in a sexy pose. There's not one of them that's just in some sort of a generic dance pose or standing there or something, you know? It's like they're not doing a back bridge. They're doing a spread eagle. It's clickbait for pedophiles, okay? Anyway, during all of the scenes where the girls are seen dancing, whether they're practicing, goofing off, or in the performance itself, the camera's focusing on their bodies, their movements, and zooming in on their backsides and crotches. None of the girls have fully developed breasts, otherwise I'm sure we'd have breast shots going on too. But the camera is clearly, if you know anything about photography, like, the camera's job is to draw your eye to a certain part of the image. So when you take a still picture, you know, like on your iPhone or whatever, you get the grid that you can put on your camera. If you turn that feature on, there's a grid. The point of that is so that you can look in the camera and line the shot up so that the center focal point of the picture is what you want to really focus on or how you want to present it. And that's what a cameraman does with a video camera and a film. They find the angle that they're going to get to draw your eye into whatever it is that the director wants you to see. This is all intentional. It's filmmaking. They don't just run around by accident with a camera like a reality TV show or a home video your uncle took at your birthday party. This is deliberate filmmaking. Okay? So, anyway, there's another brief clip of them in their underwear getting dressed. Now, the clip isn't long, but it's not necessary for the story. There's like countless clips, tons of clips that end up on the cutting room floor when you make a film. You film tons of stuff, and then at the end, during the editing process, you throw stuff on the floor and go, I don't need that. You start hitting delete here, delete there, and, you know, some of the scenes are not there. Why did they elect to just say, yeah, let's keep that scene in there where they're taking their clothes off and changing? You know, they're not necessarily totally naked, but, like, why do we need to see that, you know? This isn't quite the same as a scene where a kid is 5 years old and dad says, get ready for us, you know, your ballet recital, honey. And she's trying to jump into her costume and, you know, it's cute. It's something that parents relate to. Like, this isn't the case. These girls are alone in the room and there's a changing scene and, you know, they're showing things a little more than they need to. Wardrobe. The wardrobe itself, okay? Most of the scenes the girls are in, they're wearing crop tops, bodycon shirts. That means body-conforming shirts, like shirts that are just hugging everything. Like if they weren't wearing a training bra or something under there, nipples would be showing. Okay. Short shorts and underwear. This is the chosen wardrobe for the film, for the scenes that these girls are in throughout the film. The main focus of the film isn't on discussion or subject matter. It's obviously on visual imagery. The visual imagery is just too much. They don't spend any time on this alleged story. It's going to start sounding like, when I describe this, it's going to start sounding like I watched the whole film on like fast forward or mute or something, you know, with like subtitles off and forgetting to put them on. No, like I watched the film. Okay. Go on Google image search for a second and just do this. Like you search up the film, you're going to find plenty of shots of the girls posing with their butts out, their legs wide open, with their crotches kind of dead center to where your eye would go in the shot. Like it's just ridiculously blatant, you know. There's not like a girl in the background with her legs kind of in a split and then three girls in the front just kind of walking or posing or picking something up off the ground or playing ball. No, like the girls behind her are making faces and the girl front and center to the camera has her legs open. These are the pictures you're going to find on Google. They're making seductive poses with their eyes. They're putting their finger in their mouth seductively, not like just an unconscious nervous biting my nail thing. Like it's the what you would expect finger in the mouth seductive look, the come hither look. The kissy faces. There's kissy faces on these pictures and from the movie. Other inappropriate things that you will not find photos of anywhere else, okay? In other words, if you searched up in Google the words 11-year-old spread eagle, the FBI is going to probably show up on your damn doorstep. Don't worry, though. Searching those same images for cuties will only increase Netflix ratings. You're fine. So, and don't worry. Like, every scene shows the children smiling and laughing, so the viewers believe that it's all in fun and the girls love it. It's good, right? They're always smiling in these pictures. That's the other thing. So, you know, there should be a moment of concern. There should be apprehension because at the end of the film, the whole thing is like one dirty movie. And then at the end of the film, there's like 5 minutes left and the child suddenly comes to a complete epiphany and realizes she's done the wrong thing and becomes a totally good, normal kid again. It's like totally the most anticlimactic ending on the planet. Worst screenwriting in the history of filmmaking. And this is how they ended it. They just sort of pressed a quick undo button on everything you just saw. And this is what we're supposed to just think. Like, it's all good. But the girls never had an apprehension. They were smiling and forceful. And anyway, there's one moment where the children have somehow accessed what is implied in the film as pornography. Why is this in the film if it's not about sex and kids and... Why have the actresses been taught to explore this? Why aren't the parents? Why don't the parents have restrictions on their phones in the movie, preventing access to things like that? If you have an 11-year-old kid and you get them an iPhone or a smartphone, wouldn't you go in there and make sure they aren't surfing the web freely? Come on, you know, put some restrictions on the damn phone. None of them did. Everything's peachy. These girls are like, hey, check this video out. And at no point during any of this did the children have like a regular heart-to-heart with a parent. You know, it was mostly based on like traditions and things like that and rebellion against tradition. But there was no real sitting down and having a family chat here. I mean, it was just weird. The whole family dynamic was strange. It was like every adult in this lead character's family was just weak and had no control over this 11-year-old child. I was like, really? I had an 11-year-old child who was a bit of trouble. And believe me, we still had control over her. She couldn't get anything past us. So anyway, moving on. While chatting with unknown strangers on this online site in the movie, one of the girls posts a photograph of her genitals. Okay, this actually happens. She goes in the bathroom. She takes off her panties, locks herself in the bathroom, of course, takes off her panties, spreads her legs, takes a photo, and uploads it. And she shows a little bit of shame by covering her face and going, oopsies. But, you know, this is what she did. Well, of course, that ends up all over the place. And the school finds out, and all her, you know, and this is again a strange thing. All her peers find out, and they're all over her for it. But there's no like school calling home, talking to the parents, like nothing. The adults are completely excluded from the whole process of everything that's going on in this film. There are no adults in the film. The point of the film and the point it's trying to make is that, you know, the kids live completely separate lives from the parents, and parents have no power. This is just going to happen, right, parents? Bull crap. So later there's this backlash. The peers are calling her sluts and her friends sluts, like everybody's having it out. And one girl gets face to face, and, you know, there's no parents involved here, no adults, nothing. And the scene is compounded when one of the girls gets pinned to the ground and they pull her pants off. Like, this is the first of all, this is harsh. Okay. I was a kid growing up. Kids would, you know, in a fight situation, would maybe throw pudding in somebody's face or slam them to the ground or punch them or kick them. Nobody attempted to pull anybody's clothes off ever. This did not happen. So this is now a sexually driven assault, an invasion of one's, you know, personal body here in retaliation to this behavior. Like, this is literally, you know, without adults there to break it up or whatever, this was literally going to turn into something really crazy that we would have never imagined, you know? So the girl's pants are removed. She's not nude, but she's in her underwear, and the camera once again is focusing at an angle where we are getting a nice shot of her little butt cheeks. What is the point of the child buttocks shots? Like, what is wrong with this filmmaker? The girls somehow bypass security at a bar later in the movie, and they enter the bar. Now, this is ridiculous. I've been working bars for years. Little kids don't just waltz in and out of the place, you know, during peak hours. Maybe during daytime hours when it's serving food and they were expected to be with their families, but this was not the case. This was like a nightclub type of scene, and they just waltzed in. This doesn't freaking happen, folks. So, you know, a very unrealistic scene. Again, just for what? Obviously, whatever happens in that nightclub is the focus, and it has to happen. So they have to get into the nightclub. So this weak security situation, the kids have walked into the bar just so that we can see what follows next. So, you know, hopefully it's something pertinent to the story. No, not really. Security guard finally catches up with them and says, "You can't be here. Get out." One girl decides to tell them that they're dancers. That doesn't mean they have a right to be there, by the way. She then starts dancing and twerking for the security guard, who should say, "Knock it off, get out of here." But he doesn't. He just stands there and watches them intensely. And we're supposed to just believe like he's shocked. Listen, there ain't nothing that a child is going to do to shock me. But we're supposed to believe this guard is shocked. And now, oh no, he doesn't know what to do. And he's, you know, hesitant to throw them out again. He forgot why he was there. Like, are you kidding me? And all of that happens with the idea that, you know, they just snuck into the bar. Like, we put that in the film. Yet again, a pointless scene just to have yet another twerking moment in a strange place. There's another scene where the girls are watching a video online of some young adult women dancing and twerking, you know, which is at least acceptable in the case of adults. You know, whether you like it, you don't like it, at least they're adults, right? And this is supposed to be the inspiration for these kids to go into this dance competition. So during the viewing, one of the women pulls her shirt, during this video, pulls her shirt down and displays her bare breast to the camera. And of course, all the adults, all the adult men watching the film are like, "Oh, a booby," right? So, okay, this is obviously yet again another moment of trying to attract attention. That's fine, whatever. So she pulls her shirt down, and the girls just kind of go, "Ooh," as they're watching it, and they're giggling. What do you mean? You mean to tell me that a young girl, has never seen a booby before? They shouldn't be feeling that way. Like, this is really strange behavior towards whatever they were watching. But anyway, they start giggling, and it is what it is. The scene is, again, an unnecessary scene. It could be implied. There's no reason to have the boob pop out, you know? So this show was advertised to be released TV-14. That's the rating. It was changed to TV-MA. And that probably is why, but there's, you know, there's plenty of reasons why it shouldn't even been TV-MA or TV-allowed. Incidentally, why did the rating change? Did they admit that the film was inappropriate and bent the rules to release it anyway? That's suspect, isn't it? The film rating changed. I remember watching that happen. It happened just as the internet exploded over this controversy. TVMA means no one under 17 should be watching this film. So the actresses in the film are not even old enough to watch the film they're in. Anybody else a little worried yet? And it has nothing to do with violence. I'm not talking about a kid was in a movie where they were shooting guns and, you know, she was a victim of violent crime. Like, that's different, okay? That's at least real life here and kind of acceptable. But this is a very highly sexual, inappropriate film. Everything about it that deems it TVMA is based on the sexual content. It has nothing to do with language. It has nothing to do with violence. It has nothing to do with graphic images. It has to do with sex. And that's why it earned TVMA. Keep that in mind. That's a fact. Cannot be disputed. It is a fact. That's why it was changed. The girls are always hanging out together in the film, seemingly in an abandoned area. This is their hangout spot. You know, there's graffiti and it looks like some kind of a playground in the background. And they're just there, but they're anything but stealthy. They're loud, they're laughing, they're having a great time, they're blasting music on a radio and dancing and practicing their dance routine or whatever it is. This is what they're doing. But they're not stealthy. Look, in this day and age, with human trafficking being out of control as it is, this is a perfect scenario for an unmarked van to drive up with traffickers and grab these kids, snag them, yank them off the street, and take off. There's no adults around. There's nobody ever around in these scenes. These kids are in a little secluded hangout spot. They're safe away from adults, but they're in, you know, they're in a cemented area where any car could just drive up and grab them. And heck, at gunpoint, traffickers could easily take the entire troop. They just pull a gun out and go, if you move, you die, get in the van. They're all getting in the van, I guarantee you. So this is like a really, really sketchy thing, because if a child was to watch this, even though TVMA implies they aren't allowed to, it would almost give them the idea that this is okay. You're implying that this is a good idea. And, you know, once again, this is clickbait for the pedophiles. They're looking at this. If the traffickers are watching this, they're looking at this like, oh, yeah. We're gonna start looking around for those places, too. Thanks for the idea. So it's important to understand today that more than ever, implying that girls should or do hang out in places like this is very unsafe. Their twerking and other sexual antics are only welcoming such criminals. They are, in the film, grooming children to shape themselves as future victims. Okay? If you think that's far-fetched, well, keep researching it. You have a ways to go. The girls discovered a condom at some point. So one of them blows it up like a balloon and places it inside her shirt like a little breast. Okay? This happened in the film, too. If you watch the whole film and you didn't see this scene, I did. It means somebody cut it out. But I'm telling you, it was there when I watched it. Why was it a condom? Why couldn't they just do that with a balloon? Why couldn't this is deliberate filmmaking. Deliberate. Nobody on the film said, so we were going to do the balloon scene, but we can't find the balloons. And then, you know, the key grip over it. Stage number 4 pulls out a condom from his wallet and says, you can use this. Like, that's not what happened. This is deliberate. This was part of the inventory for the film. It was in the script. So the film writers are obviously pushing boundaries. There's a scene where the lead character's uncle tries to speak with her about her behavior. He's stepping in now as the adult and saying, yo, hole, come here. We got to talk. Instead of throwing a tantrum like a kid would do, or even, you know, submitting and going, okay, you're in charge, I'm sorry. You know, there's nothing here. The kid doesn't back down. She doesn't stomp out of the room. She doesn't throw a tantrum. She doesn't do any screaming or anything you would expect from a child. Instead, she makes an incestuous pass at her uncle. Yep, that's right. She literally does what a child would never do, violates the laws of nature, and looks at her blood relative and tries to get him to come at her and tear her clothes off and let her have it, even though she doesn't really know what that means. That's awesome. Great. Great job. Good filmmaking. But this is not a softcore porn by any means. Of course, the uncle doesn't take her up on it, but like, what is going on here? I mean, if that's the case, the 5 minutes at the end where the kid has an epiphany and turns 180 degrees and becomes a normal kid again is bull, complete crap. Because this scene alone shows this child is overdue for some serious therapy. She's not okay. She's got to go to a freaking psychologist. But, you know, we're just led to believe that she's fine at the end. Everything's peachy. The porn fairies have hit her with a magic wand to undo their mayhem. Those evil little horny gnomes. So, if this sexual desire had any relevance to the story, the child would not be joining a dance troupe in the story. She'd be pursuing a boy around her age in hopes of exploring her sexuality further. There'd be some psychological consistency here, but instead, it's inconsistent with the story, and the scene is completely out of place and blatantly disturbing. Period. And one last little snippet of what's in the film. At one point, a grandmother decides to step in and help the child by, quote, healing her with some sort of old-school voodoo remedy thing, okay? The remedy begins with meditation, and it ends with the child in a tight undershirt, all sweaty. She is covered in dew and convulsing from head to toe, which looks like she's having an intense orgasm. I mean, it's just horrifying. And it's very suggestive, and any child predator out there would probably put that on loop. Like, it is psychotic to see this. This is just weird. There's nothing in the story that even foreshadows that this could be coming so that you're prepared for it. You're like, what the hell now? Now, remember, this film is TVMA. I'll repeat again, no one under 17 is recommended as a viewer. What does that mean? That means the film is for adults only. Wow. This is an adult-only film. But the actresses in the film, they're much younger. They're, you know, it's a weird thing. It means that, like, everybody believes that they got full parental permission. And I don't know what parents okay this. I would be shocked if in the future we see all of these girls with an illustrious acting career, okay? The actresses in the film, doing the suggestive and questionable things they are too young to view this film, and they're in it. Pedophiles are adults. When you make a film that is purely for adults, and it has high levels of content with girls and sexual implications, it is pedophile food. This film is made for adults and features children doing very sexual things. It's pedophile food, period. Here's another one I want to just throw in. It's not about the scenes, but if you go to Google and look up Cuties on Netflix, that's it, just Cuties on Netflix. You may or may not get the same results, but I did this on Google, and it came up, and it said available on Netflix. Like, there's a little spot. There's website links, but there's a little section that kind of pops up in one of Google's kind of, you know, quick link things that pop up at the top of the search. And it says available on Netflix. And then it says top voted tags. So these are the tags used to find this movie. And the tags are disturbing, gross, unsettling, creepy, cringeworthy, explicit, shocking. I'm not making this up, folks. These are the top voted tags to find the movie. Are you kidding me? So if there wasn't an issue with the film, why would a simple Cuties on Netflix search bring up top-voted tags like these? None of them are positive tags. There's something dramatically wrong with the film and the grand population of people upset about it. A greater population, thankfully, are the people that are pissed about the film are a greater population than the ones who aren't. But, you know, what the... It's ridiculous. Now, just a little sub-note, but for the conspiracy theorists out there, I'll pet them. I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I believe in doing your research, and I believe that if you think the entire world is pretty, you're a little naive. If you go to Netflix and you search for the word God, when you're doing a film search, search God, you'll find just a few films having anything to do with religion or God. There's not that many. If you search the word Satan, you'll find over 20 films and shows where the devil is a strong theme. It is a central part of the story. So those people out there who have been deemed conspiracy theorists, who believe that the world is governed by evil lunatics, Satan worshipers, or whatever you want to call them, would view this as proof. I just see it as a disturbing coincidence. It's a little strange that Netflix has such a dark side to it. Cuties defines the times. Those who support the film will argue that it's no worse than music videos today. I say that's irrelevance. This is a film, and it has no relevance to what idiotic pop stars are doing with their bodies and their music videos. It is up to parents to say you will not listen to that music or watch those videos, as it is to not watch this film. It's very different. Some people argue that society is more accepting today because we've come a long way, which is why we can maturely view these films and study them for their interesting, chat-worthy subject matter. No. We have not come that much of a long way, especially considering the orangutans we have out there who are doing some of the other atrocious things that happened all through 2020. Folks, there are plenty of ways to make a film that addresses the alleged story of young kids hitting a point in their life where they are sexually aware. The imagery and how this film was made is a blatant attempt to cater to the minds of pedophiles, a word that is so awful that it is never even corrected by my autocorrect when I'm typing it. When I type pedophiles, I type very quickly. I tend to misspell things, and autocorrect will pick that up as it does. It's intended to do. It never has never done that. I will intentionally misspell pedophiles by one letter, and it never picks up on it. The word is so awful, it's not even allowed in the goddamn dictionary. Okay? It's horrible. Food for thought, boys and girls. I hope you digested that one. This film is nothing short of normalizing the behavior of young female children. It's saying it's perfectly normal. People like the sick father of the former student I introduced at the beginning of this podcast, they would probably enjoy films like this a little too much. Okay? Netflix can make any excuses they want for their decision and perhaps their behavior behind closed doors. There is enough of us out there that protect our children from predators, sick individuals, and the folks at Netflix or whatever. But we won't be supporting this film. That's fine. But Netflix, you know, they're normalizing this. And society is normalizing this. It's not normal. It is not healthy. I was a psych student in college. Like, that's what I did. I have spent years and years working with kids. This is not healthy at all. One last thing while we're here, because I figure why not point fingers where they belong. If women's rights and sexual exploitation and all of that is protected so strongly, then why haven't our boldest women's rights activists, our boldest activists for female rights, stood up for these young female children who have been exploited in this film? Because I promise you, none of these children would hold up in an interview discussing the nature of the film they starred in. They're not mature enough to handle it. So where are the top-notch people who perhaps are in our government that have done nothing but talk about women's rights for so long? Where are they? Why aren't they talking? What happened to our politicians on this one? Drop the ball much? Wendy Davis, Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, a former neighbor of mine who is still a jerk in my eyes, Carolyn Maloney, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, dare I use her name ever in public. Where are these people that claim that they would fight to the death for women's rights? Well, these young girls are being exploited. They haven't said a word about this film, and it's been over a half a year since its release. Where are they now? That's right, I stuck Obama in the sea of women on that list, by the way. He's boldly said he stands by them, and so now is his chance. Where are you? Where's the big mouth that he always has something to say? The politicians who claim that they will fight against anything that would harm women and future women, which would be children, you know, girls, young girls. These nitwits have nothing to say about this film, nor have they said a damn thing about Andrew Cuomo. Not a thing. So, something's wrong here. Some would call these people simply cowards, all talk and no actions. Others would say they pretty much are just protecting their own. I'm not making a declaration of either. I simply challenge all of them or any of them to stand up, show their actions, show that actions speak louder than words, get up there and stop talking and start doing. Prove that you have what it takes to do what you say you would normally do, or step down and shut up. You can't stand by your own words if you don't care about women's rights, if you don't care to protect young children from these pedophiles. You're as much a part of the problem as anyone else. That's it. And while we're on the subject of protecting children, once again, if you go to my website and you happen to be interested in my music or my music books and you purchase them, I'm going to make this very clear. If you didn't see my website, it's up there, clear as day. 50% of my profits go to UNICEF to help fight human trafficking and child exploitation. So I'm doing a lot more than these knuckleheads claim they do. That's right, politicians. I do more than you do. And I always have. Just ask the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, where I have donated my time. I charge everybody for my time, but I will not charge the Boys and Girls Clubs of America for my time, because it's not right. I go in there and I donate my time to make these kids happy and to show them, teach them about music or music appreciation or whatever it is, and share this wonderful world that I'm in with them to make their day, because they're there for a reason, and our job as adults is to work with them and make their future awesome. Not to convince them and their parents that they should probably one day strive to be in a movie like Cuties. Happy trails, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you have anything to say, by all means, shoot it over. Please bear in mind that I'm not interested in having fights and arguments with anybody. Friendly conversations only. I've said this on my YouTube channel. When people try to troll or say negative comments, they're getting deleted or ignored. Nobody cares. We're not here to fight with each other. If you don't agree, you don't agree. But try to remember that I have done a great amount of research on this, and this is not really up for debate on if it's right or if it's wrong. The question really is, what are we going to do about it? So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Once again, my website, nicolalongas.com. You can email your ideas, thoughts, suggestions, questions, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email, nico@nicolalongas.com, and I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much.